Dr. Swabany, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So this is a time of year that can be very difficult for people. The days can be quite cold. There's still a lot of darkness. And so we wanted to visit the topic of winter wellness. And you sent some bullet points, and I want to just start out with the fact that your sheet starts with, don't worry about being sick. You know, and we have this attitude of like, you have to fight an illness.
Right. I like to think of illness, especially like the minor illnesses that come through in these winter months, as a workout for the immune system. So just like every other muscle and system in our body, it needs to work out and it needs to cleanse. So there's this idea that if you're sick, you need to do everything you can to remediate the symptoms and to get rid of it. And it's not that we don't want to get rid of it. Of course, it makes a difference in our lives if we're sick for many days or weeks at a time. But I do think in general, getting an illness is a good way for our immune system to practice functioning at fighting off bigger, badder illnesses in the future.
Okay. So a basic cold, you don't worry so much about those.
Don't worry about it and treat it as a way to learn how your body gets sick and also learn how to care for it. So doing things like resting and drinking water and eating light foods, you know, that's good practice for all of us anyway. And so take it as a time to rest.
What do you mean when you say learn how your body gets sick?
So we all have the same basic physiology, but we do tend to get sick in different ways. One person might tend to get more sinus issues. One person might tend to get more ear infections. One person might get, you know, everything, every small cold seems to go into their chest.
Mm.
So then knowing that about yourself, you can learn the ways in which you can treat those things, preferably naturally. Although I do want to say that, you know, some illnesses are severe, and if it's prolonged and if it appears to be severe, obviously you want to see a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to minimize that. These viruses and sometimes bacterial infections that come around in the winter months can be severe for some people, particularly if they're immune compromised or have any other chronic health conditions. And beyond that, I like to talk about prevention. In the winter months, we do tend to get a little more tired. A lot of people feel that with less light during the days.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a proponent of allowing your body to rest.
Bears hibernate.
and we don't need to 100% hibernate, but I think it's helpful for us to slow down a little bit, use it as a more reflective time. So rest is big. Hydration is big. These are things that can prevent illness in the first place. Just sleeping and drinking water won't prevent illness, probably. What you eat matters. And so there's a lot of dietary pieces involved in preventing illness in the first place, too, and also allowing you to move through an illness more efficiently should you get sick. So some of those things are eating a whole foods-based diet, right?
So what does that mean, a whole foods-based diet?
So what that means is eating foods that are primarily from the ground, not packaged or processed too much. And the other word I like to use to kind of describe the type of foods that I am a proponent of eating is nutrient-dense foods, right? So foods that actually have vitamins and minerals in them that are used for the body's and the immune system's functioning. I like to say, you know, shop in the outer perimeter of the grocery store. A lot of the stuff in the middle sections are going to be those processed, sugary foods with things that your body's going to need to detoxify rather than helping function better.
Should our diets be changing in the winter? I feel like all I want to do is eat.
All you want to do is eat.
I want calories so bad.
Yeah. I think that's probably natural to a certain extent. I do think a lot about and talk to my patients about changing the foods they eat in the winter. So we do better, I think, eating foods that are more cooked in the winter, so less salads, more cooked vegetables and soups and broths. And
is there more to it than it's warm?
Yes, there are different lenses to look through. So like an Ayurvedic medicine lens, which is an ancient Indian form of medicine. They do talk about the warmth of the food. Both in Ayurvedic medicine and Chinese medicine, they'll talk about the digestive fire. You know, how that translates physiologically, I'm not really sure, but I do notice that a lot of people tend to have weaker digestion in the winter months. And so eating foods that are easier to digest, i.e. lightly steamed vegetables versus raw ones.
Okay.
Large amounts of meat are probably not great, but some meat is helpful. Fish is a good one as well. So these foods might help prevent illness in the long term. And I also am a big fan of cultured foods.
Fermented?
Fermented foods.
Okay.
Yeah. So those also feed the digestive flora and help the body digest better.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I think about a lot with my ancestors in particular, there is a strong sauna tradition among a lot of Northern Europeans. What is going on in the sauna?
There are a lot of benefits to sauna, but the main thing and the easiest way to think about it is just that you sweat. And that is a really good way to increase the body's production of white blood cells that raise in temperature in your body, helps your immune system function more optimally. Mm. The sweating piece is also detoxification. So we've done a couple talks in the past on toxic accumulation in the body, and that leaves us more susceptible to illness. So we have this sort of increase in energy at the cellular level when we're in the sauna and our temperature is raised. If you think about when you're sick, Ashley, what does your body do? Often you get a fever, right? Especially young kids who are vital.
Mm-hmm.
They get a fever, sometimes a high fever. And that's because the body as a whole really is responding to that illness, raising the temperature in order to kill the illness off. So mm-hmm. that tells us that there's sort of a cleansing and a boost in the immune system when the body temperature goes up. So sauna can do some of that for you.
Is that why a lot of doctors say you don't have to worry about a fever until it's at about 102 and then it becomes dangerous? But I feel like I've read more and more about you can kind of let a fever go a little as long as you're monitoring it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say 102 is a good number, particularly for children. A lot of adults won't even mount a fever that high.
Mm.
We're too depleted, and it's more rare for me to see an adult with a fever. I mean, I don't work in a hospital setting. I work in a clinic, so perhaps those people are going to the hospital instead of coming to see me. But children will often mount a fever, get up to 102, and just kind of stay there. And that allows their body an opportunity to kill off the infection. And that's what I mean by a workout for the immune system, right? Their body has that opportunity to kill off the infection on its own.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm generally not a fan of fever suppressants. You know, I think at times it might be helpful to help a child sleep, for example, but in general, suppressing the fever takes away the body's natural response to illness and therefore takes away the body's ability to fight the illness off, leading to other measures being required, like antibiotics.
At what point would a fever become dangerous?
I would not let it go much over 102 without having them checked out by their doctor.
Okay. What mm-hmm. can happen?
You can get febrile seizures, so seizures mm-hmm. related to high body temperatures. You know, children will often get up to 104, but I wouldn't want that to be unchecked by a professional.
Okay. How much can a change in what vitamins you take during the winter impact what we call, you know, maybe the winter blues?
Mm-hmm. It can make a huge difference. Vitamin D can be helpful with that. So vitamin D is really good both for mood and energy in the winter, but also for immune response.
And that's what we're getting in the sun during the summer. So that, okay.
Yep, exactly. So we also can benefit a lot from vitamin C, beta carotene, and zinc in the winter months. You know, most multivitamins will cover those bases, but I do think it's okay as well to have extra vitamin C on hand and take that when you feel you've been exposed to illness or are getting sick. It's not one of those measures, again, that's going to kill the virus for you. It's going to help your body's immune system work through the illness.
Does it matter the source of the vitamin? Like, do you need to be spending a lot of money to get a good vitamin?
Oh, that's a great question. With these vitamins and minerals I'm talking about here, generally not. It generally does not have to be really costly. Vitamin C, zinc, and vitamin D are readily available. Vitamin D3 is the type of vitamin D you want to take. I generally recommend people get their vitamin D levels tested. So ask your doctor if it's never been tested. And I like to see those levels probably generally higher than a conventional medical doctor might like to see them, like your total vitamin D level on blood work, because I think there's a lot of preventative aspects to that, even in the chronic diseases. But most of the brands you find of these types of vitamins will be just fine.
Do you see a difference between men and women and things that can happen to them in the winter? And I don't know if this is just because, you know, the majority of my friends are women, but I feel like within my circle of friends, like, women talk about how hard winter is. And I just don't hear that from men. I don't know if it's because literally there's something in the female body that makes it harder, or if this is that men aren't allowed to have feelings kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, right, or express the difficulty that they're having.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not thinking of anything off the top of my head that, like, I can see might be a difference, other than what you said, which is just the willingness to kind of express the challenge that you're having during those months. But the truth is that my practice also is primarily females. I'm gaining some male patients, but generally, you know, I'm probably at 85 to 90% females. And so that's what I see too. And it's difficult for most people.
What are some good at-home options for doing, like, you don't necessarily need to go to a clinic or a hospital for everything that comes your way in the winter?
Yeah, there's so many things we can do at home. Exercise and rest and water. So those are the top three. I would say that some things that you can do at home that are also really helpful, depending on the symptoms you have, are hot Epsom salt baths. Baths are going to raise your body temperature if you're not mounting a fever, so that can help your body fight off the infection if your body's not mounting that fever on its own. And then the Epsom salts are full of minerals. So you get some minerals that are soaking in through the skin with a hot Epsom salt bath. And it feels really good, especially if you have achy, sore muscles and joints.
And a big bathtub.
And if you have a big bathtub. I really like steam inhalations at home. So if you are someone who has essential oils or has access to them, or even if you have herbs in your cupboard, if you have a lot of sinus congestion, a steam can be helpful to clear the congestion. And if you put herbs or essential oil into that steam water, the volatile oils from those herbs and essential oils can actually move up into your nasal passages and help to kill off infection in the sinuses. So some of my favorite herbs and essential oils for that are thyme, oregano, and then if you have eucalyptus essential oil, that can be helpful too. Rosemary might also be helpful. So those are some things you have in your cupboard. Just heat a pot over the stove, throw some herbs in there, and let the steam come up. You should be able to smell the herbs, then you know they're working. If you can smell them, they're working. And then, you know, set your hot pot just on a trivet on the table, put a towel over your head, and enjoy a steam. Don't burn yourself.
Yeah, so I've done that before, and I've always thought of the essential oils as just something that smelled good. But you said that they are killing things. So what are they actually doing, and where's the proof for that?
Yeah, good question. So there are known properties to many plants, and there's actually a lot of research on many of them. And one of the properties that some of those plants that I was listing have, like thyme, oregano, and rosemary, are antimicrobial properties. So that just means that they are capable of killing off bacteria, viruses, yeast, infections, basically. So those essential oils do smell good, some of them better than others, and putting them in a steam will have literal antimicrobial properties for your sinuses if you inhale them.
Do you think that we will see more testing done on plants? And I'm thinking specifically of the one plant that gets all the attention, marijuana.
Okay.
But do you think that we will start to see more science behind plant medicine?
Yeah, I believe so. And I think you might be surprised about what's already there. A lot of the research is there, and yes, it is growing, that information, which is great because a lot of us have access to these herbs but don't know how to use them.
Sure.
And long ago, they were just a part of people's lives. They weren't something separate on the side. You see, we grew them in our gardens and we ate them and we prepared them in different ways to use as medicine. And so I have a dream. That's where we're headed.
Dr. Swabany, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.